G'day, listeners. Another week done, and you're listening to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. It's so good to have you joining us. We're in for a fantastic week this week. I'm kind of excited about it. Bar Karate, of course, is the action of describing your race with your hands in the bar at the end of a big day. And to talk all things sailing, I'm joined by my good mate, Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
Did you get that, BP?
What do I say to that? What do I say to that? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another wonderful week of Bar Karate. Jordan, hello. Bicey, hello. All good.
All right, I'm looking forward to the chat this week, mate. All right. And also joining me...
He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr.
Is my good buddy, Mr. Nick Bice.
Someone's got a new toy. Someone's worked out a play with the new toys.
You and I have both got off planes. We landed in Australia this morning. So how are you feeling, mate? Good?
Yeah, good, back in Australia. Got back yesterday. Feeling good, refreshed, ready to roll.
Okay. All right. BP, I've got a question for you, buddy.
Shoot.
All right. So as you know, Bosch and I are roaming around the world setting up the distribution network for the USAFE product. I've just literally landed from a trip through, I was in Thailand and Taiwan, and just landed, flew China Southern, back of the bus, cheapest economy seats, cheapest economy seats where, you get the scraps of the food left at the end. And on Wednesday, the trip from Thailand to Taiwan, I had to take the 1 a.m. flight so it would save on a hotel room to get across to there. So ran for 36 hours without sleep just to get the work done. And
you have to hire pillow. You have to hire pillows.
That's it. You got it. So this is the sort of program we're running. Just can you ask Bicey what it was like for him with all the journey with his travel back to Australia? I hope he's okay. Ask him what class he flew.
Well, actually, I'll jump in. I did have some issues though. I was running a little late for my flight, but fortunately enough, when you're flying up the top end, I was picked up by a limo and we were allowed to go in the commuter's lane. So we made it just in time. And my biggest issue was choosing whether to drink Moët or Verve, to tell you the honest truth.
So, BP, he's flown back from Europe first class all the way on Emirates. First class all the way. And I'm back on the bus, China Southern.
It's a bit bloody boring though. At least he had someone to talk to. I was stuck in this little booth all by myself. Had a bed in there and all sorts, yeah.
I'll do a trade, mate, if you're really... Oh, man.
Looks like he's enjoyed the trip. He looks like he's still going from yesterday.
Yeah. I bet he's getting paid as well. Are you getting paid?
No, it's all love job.
Oh, love.
Love job, yeah.
It is for me too.
We wish, we wish.
All right. Righto, guys, let's roll into it. We've got a really full-bore guest here. We're pretty excited to have this bloke joining us. Probably, I don't know, can I say it? I wrote it down as the world's most handsome navigator, but clearly if you were choosing a navigator to go around the world or do any sort of sailing on a racing boat, he would be... If he's not the number one choice, he's number two. He's right there. He's as good as anybody on the planet in navigation. Simon Fisher, welcome to Bar Karate, buddy.
Welcome, Sci-Fi.
Good morning or good afternoon, whatever time it is over there. Good to catch up with you guys. How's it going?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. How are you going?
Yeah, very good. Halfway through my first cup of coffee here in Spain. Fresh off the back of my eldest son's 6th birthday party. So, yeah, all good.
Oh, big one. It's a big one in Spain as well, the 6th birthday party, so they say.
They all are.
Full family, dude. Goes for about 8 days.
Yeah, about that. About 50 people.
Yeah.
All right.
Good to have you here, Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
We can go into some of the stories that we used to get up to, but let's see how far we can go.
Let's take a look.
All right. Well, just for those who don't know, Sci-Fi, Director of Diverse Performance Systems. So if you're looking for someone to come on your yacht and set up the top-end systems on board, he runs that whole program. But he's also, as I said, the top pro navigator in the world. probably five times around the world now, and the Volvo is my memory for that, and has won with ABN AMRO. So involved with America's Cup projects, involved with a whole bunch of things, and also won the Navigator's Prize, which is when the navigators vote for who the best navigator is. So that's quite the honour. So you're really, you're pretty much, I've talked you up sci-fi, so you can pretty much...
Now you can correct him.
Yeah. The win was with Abu Dhabi. The first one was with ABN too, with my good friend Nick Bice.
Fair enough.
We won in other areas, you would say.
Yeah. It was certainly one of the most memorable, that's for sure.
Well, so the first question I want to hit to you is, obviously we got people listening in, you know, and people want to know how you get this. I mean, did you always want to be a navigator, or, you know, what was your sailing pathway up through the ranks?
No, it'd be fair to say I got into the navigation a little bit by accident. But it's something I've really enjoyed, and having done a bit of the round of the world stuff, not navigating, it's actually, you know, it kind of cemented the fact with me that's really what drives me and what gets me excited about offshore racing. I actually sort of got into the navigating because during my first America's Cup, I was one of the youngest guys with GBR Challenge there in Auckland, and on the B boat, I sort of was the second string guy for all sorts of different things. So when Derek, our second navigator, was busy with being the head of the design team, I sort of put my hand up and said, yeah, I'll do a bit of navigating, and it all went from there. Got into the Cup stuff after GBR Challenge, did a lot of IMS sailing, and then that went into the America's Cup with Arriva Challenge. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to do this navigation stuff, then I should have a crack at doing it sailing around the world. And actually, the Whitbread or Volvo was always what I really wanted to do as a sailor from when I was a kid. I remember watching that race, as a kid on TV. And, when the opportunity came up for that under-30 boat with ABN AMRO, then I leapt at the chance. And it's pretty much been an obsession ever since.
I reckon growing up in the, well, learning to sail in the UK, everyone has to be a navigator. Ever tried sailing on the Solent, you other blokes? You're bloody looking out for shit all over the joint.
I've had a little crack at it, but on a little mini one time, and I couldn't get out the heads. It was the needles. It was honking incoming tide and honking breeze, and it was like, oh, I'm going to stuff this. I'm turning around going back.
Yes, it's fair to say it's no surprise that there's quite a few navigators coming out of the UK. Especially, it's a pretty interesting place to sail. There's a good crop of them came out of the Admiral's Cup because they all needed a bit of local knowledge on all these boats. And I guess we started quite a good tradition in the UK for turning out some reasonable navigators.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So just for those who, you know, probably the most biggest question we get all the time is, how do you get on the ocean race? And, you know, always say to someone, you need a second skill. And one second skill a lot of people think about is, oh, maybe I do navigation. So how did you learn your trade? Was it just with that America's Cup stuff, or was it just the fact that you were exposed to people? Or?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I picked a lot of the navigation up as I went along, really. And, it was, I remember that, like, the first time navigating a Cup boat, I probably made a right hash of it. But, I just sort of learned on the job a bit. And, you pick it up as you go along. And then I've been really lucky to work with some great people along the way. So my first, as you gather experience, obviously you get much more comfortable with the software. And, you got to keep remembering you're sailing on a boat as well, and not running a computer program, keeping your eyes out the boat. And that's always a big, big thing. And then, once I got to things like the Volvo race, working with ABN AMRO, surrounded by a great group of guys, there couldn't have been a better bunch to sort of serve my apprenticeship there, working with Stan Honey and Mike Quilter, Ken Campbell from Commander's Weather. It was a great group, and I learned so much, but it's still frightening actually to think back about how much I didn't know when I did that first race.
Tell the truth, boy, it was lucky Sci-Fi was there. Because when Ken and Stan would be banging on about what's about to come up with the leg, there was probably 11 of us who had not a clue what they were talking about. So luckily Sci-Fi was there to actually take it all in.
Very cool.
Yeah, right. So, hey, just Sifo, I wanted to ask you. Well, I was only talking the other day about it with some guys down here about the deliveries of old and the sailing of old with the old weather facts that we used to carry along with us back in the early days with the old black and white printed out paper that used to spit out with a picture of Australia with the hectopascals and all that jazz. It's come a long way, hasn't it? It's come a long way. Sort of, can you give us a bit of a rundown of you know what you've seen happen over the last few years, in particular with the technology? Obviously, it's helping you, helping all navigators, I should say. But it must have come a long way the last few years.
Yes, it's changed a lot. I mean, I guess I was quite lucky to come in at the point where we did have internet and you could download grid files and all of that. But you know, I remember in the first round of the world race I did. Yeah, obviously we'd be like on a 56K modem speed, struggling. It might take hours to download the weather. And you've maybe downed one weather model or something like that. And some surface charts, and you'd be scratching your head over it. And now there's an access to just such an enormous wealth of data that really it's picking your way through all the different information, the millions of different answers and the different models you can get, and trying to make sense of it all. So, for sure, it's always changing and always developing. But at the end of the day, as well, though, it's still about trying to work out what's going on around you, what's important, what's not, and picking your way through that. But for sure, it's great. There's just so much information available now, and it's just so easy to get your hands on, which really makes all that sort of weather and navigation that much more accessible, which is great.
Yeah, sure.
So do you, like, can you, I mean, it's a bit childish, but can you still shoot, take a shot with a sextant, that sort of thing? Have you ever done that?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I can. That's actually quite fun. I've done a little bit of that. I've never had to do it really in anger. I'd say some of these boats we sail on now, it'd be pretty hard to do something with a sextant. I dare say, trying to take a sun sight or a star sight with on a new Mockham 60 where you're foiling would be nigh on impossible. But no, ironically, I think it was the last race in the Volvo. It was the first time we actually had to be qualified to use one as a navigator, right, with your yacht master offshore. But probably the first time in the rules you didn't actually have to carry one.
You're right. What races actually do you have to? Is it the Transpac, right?
The Transpac you used to. But they've stopped that now as well. Okay. But there is a trophy, the Mark Rudiger trophy for the person who does the best sights. I think that's obviously judged by Stan.
Oh. But, I've won it again.
I was getting to see if he was qualified for Don McIntyre's event. I was trying to find out if he was travelling with Sexton and paper charts when he gets on a boat. So,
scroll of charts under your arm.
I'm a bit of a fan of paper charts.
You have to carry one. You have to carry.
Yeah, I'd never leave the dock without them. It's always good to have.
Me neither.
I'm always well prepared for when things go pear shaped.
You have to carry one in the mini transit. So,
do you?
Yeah, the mini. Apparently, I guess it's pretty cool. You're not allowed a plotter, are you? So you have to actually. You got the GPS, but you've got to plot it all onto paper. Yeah. Figure that out.
Correct. Yep. Correct.
And probably up to your waist in water.
Take your waterproof charts.
I'm with Simon. You can't go to sea without your paper charts. You're crazy if you don't, because sometimes, we've seen the outcome of sometimes when you don't look at your paper charts occasionally. So, yeah. I think what we should do, though, if you're an inexperienced or you're sort of thinking about this, like what someone needs to understand is the amount of work a navigator's doing in the lead up to a leg start. So, you know, 2 weeks out, a month out, a week out sort of thing. It's not, navigator's job is not just while you're on the boat, is it? Like there's all the pre-navigation that goes on, all the modelling that's being run. That's correct, isn't it? Like if you were doing the TJV next week, are you doing the TJV?
I'm not sailing, but I'll be there to go check it out. Yeah. Obviously the Amokas is pretty hot topic at the moment. Now the boats for the ocean race, so I'll be in Le Havre next week, just checking it out. And I know it'll be fun to turn up a regatta and not actually have to sail, not have the stress of trying to get the weather ready.
Yeah, but if you were doing the TJV right now, what would you be doing? You know, a week out.
Normally from a week out, you're trying to get a good picture of what's going on, the overall weather pattern. It's it's fair to say that, you know, you can't start too early because the forecasting is going to change. But actually, it's really useful to get like the evolution of the weather. You can see how the models are changing, and you can sort of get a bit of a judgment on how the stability of the forecast, if you see what I mean. So yeah, from a week out, it's you're looking at, you know, all the 500 millibar charts and the different models just to kind of see what's happening and day to day see how it's changing. And then as you sort of hone in on the start day, it all gets a bit more fixed and you see the sort of pattern stabilize and you get a better idea of the forecast you're going to get. And then usually during those days, you're trying to focus on a little different part of the race that's going to be important.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the start, or, you know, there's always a few crucial moments in the leg which might be the points that sort of define the race. And you're trying to look at all those options, and sometimes it's, you know, you can't get an answer. You don't know what's right or wrong, but at least if you can identify what the options are going to be, or what the factors are going to be when you hit that weather front or high pressure or whatever it is that's in the track. If you know what the issues are and you know how to make the decisions well, then it's sort of not a surprise, and you can sail well. And then it's fair to say, on top of that, there's always the performance of the boat to sort out, and, you know, things like crossover charts and all of that. So it's a lot of preparation.
I was going to say about with the 65s, obviously you got to know those boats very well, so your polars were pretty much bang on the whole way, or you knew the performance and you knew how you could perform in different conditions. But with the Onmockers, that must be a whole nother ball game for these guys. Like, how hard do they push the boat in certain conditions, and how fragile the boats may or may not be? Are you sailing at 120% or 80%, which is a massive speed difference for sure?
Yeah, for these guys, it's going to be a huge factor. And like, it's typically the TJV or the Route de Rhum. You know, you're starting in France in November, so the weather in Biscay is usually pretty horrendous, and you've probably got some pretty heinous weather to get through before you can get to slightly warmer climbs and some more trade wind kind of sailing. So, you know, picking those moments when to push, when to sort of, you know, suck it up, slow down, and just look after the boat is going to be hugely important. And I think to be honest, we're even going to see that when we go into the ocean race next time. You know, the boats are inevitably going to be a bit more fragile. The 65s were just, you know, super solid, absolute bulldozers. So you just had to go flat out all the time on those boats. But the 60s, I think it's going to be a bit more nuanced, and you're going to have to work out when to push, when to look after the boat, and for sure as well, you know. You're going to probably looking for a little less wind, a little less sea state to go fast. So that's going to be a pretty massive challenge as well. So how you deal with all the routing to actually, you know, potentially sail more distance but go a lot quicker, and manage the sea state as well. Now we're going to be foiling, so it's going to be a really interesting problem to deal with.
So what are you trying to say? You're lining up for a sixth? Roger Nielsen. Roger Nielsen shaking in his boots, and Bauer for that matter.
Yeah. Well, hello. I ended the last race on a fifth, and I said, "Well, I'm not ending on a fifth." So I kind of said on the dock in the Hague, "I'm going again." So yeah, working towards another race. So excited to be involved in a project that's as yet unannounced, but we're pretty well advanced with things in getting going. So really, really looking forward to sharing the news with everybody soon, hopefully.
Well, you could do it now.
Just phone all the people with the money. Hey, yeah, we've just done an exclusive with Bar Karate. What the fuck is a Bar Karate?
The most popular question in the world. I guess when you go around the world as well, you've got to think, you know, once you do all run your routing or your routing, then you've actually got to do a bit of pilotage work to make sure you don't hit a reef.
Yeah, it's important. Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the preparation as well. You know, you're looking over the map and trying to find anywhere that's going to be a problem. There's usually always somewhere on the route that it's going to be really complicated navigation-wise, atolls, reefs, all of that, and you can pretty much guarantee that the optimum route's going to take you right through there. So
yeah.
You do a bit of scouring over charts, and actually, you know, maybe it's a bit old school, but I always keep the paper charts handy for that. It's always good to look at something on a bit of paper. You can zoom out a bit more easier than you can do on the computer.
So you... Sorry, boss, here you go.
No, I was going to say, I don't think there's many people who would disagree with that at all.
So if you're down below half the time, you got your head in a computer half the time. For those who haven't been on a modern offshore boat, this bugger all, you're in a black cave of nothingness. How do you go with the stomach? You have any issues at all?
And I'll be the first to admit I get a little bit seasick. It's usually only on the first day.
Yeah.
Just as you're trying to, the first day, especially if you've got an upwind start and there's a big sea start, you're down there trying to download the weather. Normally I've got the typeface on my computer way too small so I can try and see more stuff on the screen and be squinting at the computer and the stomach often goes south pretty quick. But I get through it. You kind of have to embrace it, get it all out and then crack on. Last race I started stealing the seasickness tablets from the little bowl they put out for the guests. So.
What a good idea.
It wasn't the placebo that the smarty, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. It worked.
It worked, eh?
Oh, that's cool. So in the navigation world, like, is there like a, you got your own special WhatsApp little group, all the top navigators in the world talking to each other? Is that go on or no?
I haven't got the WhatsApp group yet, but it's a good idea. Yeah. We definitely will have comms. For just guess again, it's a pretty interesting group of people. So some good characters in the navigation world. So
I wonder who you're talking about.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, I was just about to say, does that happen? Do you know?
No one to be late.
they'll all find it.
Just, or the bow, all take the bowman to the bowman's dinner and just lost everywhere. Can't find a place to go.
The navigators all take different routes to get there.
Trying to get there fastest. Yeah.
Very cool. I was just about to say that it would be funny to see you all together in one room, I guess.
I think it happens every now and then, but we all get on pretty well. Yeah. It's funny, you normally as a navigator, you're the only one of them on the boat, so you kind of have to stick with your mates. You want to talk about all the boring technical stuff, you've got to hang out with the other navigators a bit.
There you go. Who's the best red-headed navigator in the world?
Very important question, this one. That's one position we've got to fill, isn't it?
That's a good question.
Well, I was just trying to think.
Red-headed navigator.
That's exactly what it just suddenly occurred to me. I was just suddenly thinking we'd gone through the staffing.
Any challenge doesn't have a navigator yet.
No, that's why I suddenly thought. Unless we have to dye someone's hair. Getting a challenge. Mm-hmm. Anyway. It'll come to you.
Let's put a wig on Sci-Fi, a big curly afro, a big red one.
Yeah. All right, so shall we, we've got a fair bit happening this week. Shall we roll into some of those little discussion points and get everyone's view on that?
Yep.
Yeah, let's do it.
Good idea.
Cool. All right, so guys, what we'll roll into is, obviously it started yesterday, is the Middle Sea Race. It's one of the sort of offshore events that all the punters get involved in. So 606 nautical mile offshore event starts in Malta, basically doing a lap of Sardinia is the best way to describe it, anti-clockwise around Sardinia.
I'll correct you.
Go on.
Not Sardinia.
What is it?
No. So it's out around Sicily.
Sicily. Yeah, sorry. Yes. Started with S in near Italy.
Not bad, though.
Yeah.
Same place, same area.
Yeah, similar area.
Pretty close.
Yeah. How's my navigation skills?
Well,
you're in this way. You're in the wrong race, dude.
Definitely one red-head who's not going to be a navigator on the Ginga Challenge.
So 113 yachts started, very, very light wind start, and they're sort of drifting downwind at the moment. It's a big event. It's sort of not the Fastnet or the Hobart, but it's a big event. We should be watching it.
Well, I'd watch it a lot more if their bloody tracker was much better on the website.
They got a new tracker this year. It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You done the Middle Sea Race, Sci-Fi?
Did we? Yeah, a few times.
Is that on ABN?
No, I didn't do it on ABN. That was a pretty light one for you guys, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, well, I think this year's even lighter. That they are right now a quarter of a day off the actual race record, and they haven't exited the Straits of Messina yet. So they're not even a third of the way through.
That part of the
world is not a fun place to sail when it's light, is it? I mean, I've done a few of those races as well, and you get up around Stromboli, the volcano, and it's got its own weather pattern there.
Not to mention a nice night light show as well.
Yes, yeah. I did see it. Did you see it spewing itself to pieces up there? The volcano.
Yeah. That is. That's one of the highlights of the race, isn't it? Sailing with a live volcano, watching the lava come out the top.
No, exactly. But when you haven't even really thought about it too much, and not even knowing that there's a active volcano is going off just daily like that, and then you see it, don't know whether to shit yourself or not.
It always makes me wonder when you come around the top of come out of the Straits of Messina there, and you come out and you sail around the top of Stromboli, and you see all the little houses dotted at the bottom of the mountain, and you go, you know, are you for real? Mm. You know, you choose to live there.
Mm. Crazy. Mm. All right, so that's being led in the monohulls by Rambler, as far as I can work out. So she'd probably be hoping for lots more wind than this, but it's not going to happen. We said I don't know, Sci-Fi, you probably know better than the rest of us. It seems to have been a lot of light winds for the last week or two in Europe. All the sort of worlds we've been looking at, they've had fairly light winds, although we did have a long delay with the Mini Transat trying to find a nice weather window. So is there anything to worry about for these guys during this race? Who's going to win? Any thoughts on the...
Oh, it's always a tricky one. It actually doesn't look too dissimilar to the last Middle Sea race I did, where it's pretty light for the first half until you get to the western end of Sicily.
Yep.
And then you kind of get into some decent southeast of it, so you sort of...
Western end of Sicily.
Do a lot of light wind running, and then the second half of the race is pretty breezy, banging up wind or reaching. But all the trickiness is going to be in the first half. It's always hard getting through the Straits of Messina. It's actually quite tidal there as well. It's quite a small gap, and then lots of water going through. So it's pretty tidal, pretty light, and then out to Stromboli. Stromboli's up in a good parking lot. It's all sort of about how close you dare to go around it. Mm. I think the last one I did, there was a load of boats that tried to stay offshore, and then all the little boats came around and, you know, banged their way around the rocks and actually stayed in breeze. So it's a pretty tricky one. But I think once they get to the western end, you know, there's a lot of sailing between Stromboli and the western end of Sicily towards Trapani. But it'd be sort of, light downwind or reaching, I think. And then once they get to the western end of Sicily, there should be a decent breeze. But it's fair to say the smaller boats are going to be out there for quite a while, I think.
So this event next year is the World Champs for the double-handed offshore thing, you know, the new Olympic class that they're bringing in the France Olympics, 24 Olympics, I guess. So have you ever thought about that, Simon? Does that come across your window at all? You thought about maybe the double-handed round offshore race or not?
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool to do, I think.
Well, I mean...
For sure.
I was going to say, you must be pretty high up in the ranking to go on and push for an Olympic gold with that new event coming into play.
I don't know about that, but yeah, maybe it's something I have to look at having a go at. It'd certainly be fun. It'd be really interesting to look at, and probably the best chance I'll ever get of being an Olympian, I'd say.
There you go. have you seen the boats?
I'll be quite an old Olympian by that stage, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, that's all right.
Never say never, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, what age was Bichot sailing the Olympics to? About 56 or something, wouldn't he? 54, something like that.
Which is on stars, yeah.
Yeah. Have you looked at the L30, the boat they're doing the Worlds in next year? Are you familiar with them at all?
Not really. Very briefly, I know there's a few boats in the running for that class, but it sounds like as well. I mean, I've heard a little bit of chat about it, but it sounds like they're not going to make the decision on the boats are quite laid out because they don't want to.
No, for the Olympics,
they won't. Anyone getting really, really skilled up on the boat and then sort of dominating the class.
I did, I did actually hear that they don't want anyone sailing in the boats before the Olympic Games, from a few weeks out. That's what the ruling is. So they're trying to make it so that everyone gets on the boat around about the same time. So it could be a new design anyway.
How are they going to keep that quiet?
Well, that's going to be interesting.
Even the guys building the boats. Mm. Yeah, that'll be a bloody hard to keep quiet, I'd say.
Actually, I will say we need to be a little bit quiet here because Boatyard Consulting has got a meeting with World Sailing coming up on a certain issue that we're talking about. So so for the World Champs...
How are we going to keep this quiet?
Yeah, exactly. I know. But, we've actually... I mean, I can't really say what we're going to be talking about now, boss. I thought I worded you up on this. With the L30s, they're for the World Champs. They're the boat they're using for the World Champs, right, which is next middle sea race. All of you are correct. They're not announcing the class that they're doing the Olympics in until 6 months out, okay? So all your pre-qualifications are being done on whatever's a big class on the continent you're based on, okay? So, I don't know what it'll be here in Australia.
Magic 25.
Yeah. Peg's not going on trip.
Everyone out on
the water.
Two out on the trap.
Anyway. They will be they're going to be quiet on that. But for you, Sci-Fi, I mean, to me, it's an obvious thing. You know, like your skill set would be pretty important because they're not going to have any of that sort of. You're going to have to do a bit of the navigation. Like whoever is in, there's two on the boat. One's male, one's female, and it's a pretty limited breed that's going to be able to go down that pathway. There's certainly a few youngsters. Have already got in their sights and doing the hard work right now, but I just thought maybe it's come in front of your mind, but obviously not. You'll just roll with the punches.
Yeah, no, we'll wait and see. But no, I'd be super keen to do it. I've thought about it a little bit. It'd be fair to say that I haven't done anything about it, but I know I'm sort of watching with interest how it's all developing and what's going to happen, and if the opportunity ever came. To get involved, I think I'd jump at it.
Who would you choose as your female counterpart?
Oh, there we
on
go.
Board.
Good question.
That's a good question. Yes.
I don't know.
It has to be a POM for you.
Yeah, it has to be British. But we'll wait and see. But I think there's actually going to be a pretty good crop of short-handed sailors jockeying for that position in the UK. They've obviously got the.
Yeah.
The Brits are sort of starting to create some good figure eight sailors and what have you. So I suspect a lot of those guys are kind of looking at doing that and getting involved and seeing it as an opportunity also. So hopefully when it does roll around, the Brits will be able to put in a pretty good challenge.
Well, I can tell you there's a couple of the youngsters off Turn the Tide that are actually campaigning already. They're out there practicing and
yeah, Henry and Hannah have been doing a bit of sailing.
Exactly. Yeah. So they've made the decision, I reckon, Henry and Hannah, exactly right. I guess all you have to do, the great thing about being for an Olympic class, all you do is got to ring up your sailing authority and tell them you want to go in and they'll make the decision and then they'll do everything for you. They can make life easy for you, mate.
Simple.
If you go and buy Walker a beer.
Exactly. There you go. All right. Okay, well, we didn't get anything out of you there. You didn't give us any names. You didn't give us any controversy. So we're disappointed in you so far.
Keep digging.
All right, let's talk about the TJV. TJV starts next week. So let's just do a little bit of a quick lead up on that. We won't talk too much, but obviously, you're going to go and have a bit of a look. You're mates with a lot. You're obviously interested on the Omoka side. Any favourites? Anything you're really interested in out of this TJV?
There's a whole crop of new Omoka boats that have just launched. So it's going to be fascinating to see how those go. And actually see if they hold together as well. It was pretty. The Route de Rhum last year was pretty interesting. You know, Chiral was the new boat. Everyone's expecting him to do well, but what? Dealing with a heap of problems, you know, loads of teething problems with being a new boat and all of that. And then you watch those guys sailing now, and yeah, they look pretty polished. It's, you know, they're sailing fast.
They've
won the Fastnet this year. They've won the Azimut Challenge. So I think they're going to be really strong. And I think they're going to be the benchmark. And then it'll be interesting to see how this proper new boats. There's some two new Verdio boats. There's a new Quan K boat out there. And there's just to see how those new guys are going is going to be really, really interesting. And whether they're ready, you know.
So, Bicey, what did Sherelle do again after they went through and made a few changes, and you were talking about that a few episodes ago. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think when they initially launched, the boat itself looked a bit unbalanced, and I think they played around with their daggerboard position, moving it probably forward a little bit. Is just from what I don't actually know that, but just from looking at the boat and the way it looks a whole lot more balanced now. But not forgetting 4 years ago, the TJV, that's when the new Hugo Boss at the time fell to pieces and they had the big rollover. So it always throws something up quite nasty.
Are you suggesting Charlie's going to be at risk?
No, I think they've sorted that boat now.
Yeah.
So that's fine. But it's these five or six brand new ones, which, yes, you could, you don't really, I saw an interview with Alex saying that it's almost a 2 year process or year and a half process to actually be able to know your boat, to actually take it around the world for the Vondo. And these guys have been sailing for some of them literally only in, 20 or 30 days on the water. So when it comes down to a racing, you've got someone alongside you and you're putting the hammer down, where do you keep turning it up or turning it down?
Exactly. Well, the other interesting thing, I don't know if any of you guys have you sort of gone and had a look a week out. Which weather model do you reckon's best, Simon, for in the Bay of Biscayne? Which one do you, the ECM or?
It's always good to look at the European model, the EC model, but and the GFS as well. You kind of got to look at all of them, all the global models, and make an assessment. But if you're just looking at one model and it's of best performance, you'd always hedge towards the EC. And for sure, those guys will be looking at that. So, you can kind of see a bit of bias to that weather model in the routing sometimes, the way the guys go. But it's probably a fair bet for being more accurate at this stage.
Okay.
Did you get the call up to do some weather for any of these guys?
No. I'm just sort of going down there as a sort of interested boat checking out the Amoka fleet. So
Cool.
That's nice. Good. Like I say, it's low stress. No weather to worry about. In this case, it's all a set of interest. So that'd be nice.
Well,
yeah, cool.
Have you looked at the models for next week?
I had a very sort of brief look. I haven't run any routes or anything yet because it's still a little ways out. But it's going to be typical Northern Europe coming into November. So they're going to be heading out there, and there's going to be a big cold front to deal with pretty early on in the race. Which could well,
It looks like
the first selection in the fleet. Exactly. Yeah.
And there could be quite a big ugly little system come into them a day or two into it. I mean, obviously we're a long way out, so the modelling's a bit weak, but it could be a tough day at the office for some of the boats. They could be, first or second night in, probably could be seeing some fairly lumpy weather. So I'd be intrigued. But it's all, I'm with you. BP, you want to say something?
Just say it's a pretty big question. I mean, we've seen these boats, flying around doing what they've been doing, and it's been all impressive. Has anyone got any actual data or information on how they've gone out and actually pushed it in hard, heavy upwind conditions? Has anyone got any information on that?
I don't think they
don't
can
go upwind in on my mate.
That's the navigator's job, mate.
Leave her on the dock. Leave her on the dock until the weather changes.
Just find that dock when you're out there in the middle of the Atlantic, it's upwind, you've got to stop now.
Actually, on that, Sci-Fi, how much sailing have you done on a 60?
A bit, not a lot, not much with these new generations of boats. So no, I'm looking forward to some opportunities to jump on them in the sort of coming months. But
Which boat is it that you're going to be doing it with? Which?
You'll give me that easily.
So if the spies are out, just check what boat Sci-Fi is going on next week and what ones he's not allowed on.
Yeah, well, I've got lots of research to do, so I'll be trying to climb on as many as I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyone who let me, I'll be really keen to look around.
Yeah, just take your iPad. Oh, I brought my own nav station. Just take your iPad with you.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question then. If you were about to build a boat, what designer would you be using?
Yeah, there's plenty of choice out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Verdi, I suppose, are pretty interesting there. I'd have to give you that though.
All right, there we go.
I'll answer. I'll get a Verdi boat, a Super 60. I'd probably do a few mods to it now.
Yeah.
But that's what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've actually done quite a lot of design work with Guillaume, for both for the ocean race. So maybe that's a safe bet.
Well,
it is the safe bet.
Safe bet or not, but Guillaume's a bloody good bloke to have a beer with.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
I'm not saying the designer was chosen on that prerequisite at all, but it's a good part of it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, no, the Verdi, well, we can't just, I mean, we know all the designers, so we don't want to burn anyone, but there is a really nice design floating around at the moment, ready to go. Pull the trigger, and I'm pretty certain that another one's going to be being built soon, Bicey.
Yep. That's good news.
Good news. Yep.
Actually, for the TJV, it was the Advent for cybersecurity that's just launched. It's probably the closest boat to the Super 60. So that would be a good one to watch, I think.
Yeah.
That is, but again, they're pretty fresh onto the water. Super 60 hull, that one. So, their foils don't look too dissimilar to what Guillaume's been designing for the last few boats that have come out. So I'd be interested to know exactly what the differences would be. But it's they're not small foils, put it that way.
No,
they're obviously, you know, it's interesting to see the designs getting braver and braver. They obviously started with quite conservative foils and were worrying about how much writing moment they create, but they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger at the moment. Oh, but it's cool as well, like all the designers have got really different options. Absolutely. The 38 boats compared to the 1K boats compared to, you know, the new Hugo Boss done by DPLP.
Did you hear Bicey's description of the Hugo Boss foils?
I'll explain that one day, Simon. But it's basically a big cock and balls. it used to be you used to have to watch your head walking down the dock with the outriggers on the 60s.
Yeah.
Now you got to watch you don't poke your eye out with the end of the foil.
Well, let's talk foils there for Sebastian Simon. Obviously, a week and a bit out, he has broken his port foil. Did anyone hear how that happened? Has anyone got any inside goss on that? Just
no, a bit of a read of it, but I didn't. It didn't. It was sort of inconclusive as to what caused it. So they're just, I think they're still trying to work it out.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like they made some modifications recently, though. They might have made the foils a bit bigger or something like that.
Yep.
I heard one rumour about that, and then the other rumour I heard is they were having some issues with getting enough angle of attack on the foils, and it's something they've actually just recently fixed.
Yep.
And they can probably generate a bit more load on the foils, so I don't know if it's the fact that it's overloaded with the new configuration or something like that. But
because
bit of a blow.
They are allowed to alter the angle of attack on the boats now. Aren't they?
Yeah, so you can go in and out, basically, with the foils, and then you've got, like, one more degree of freedom. So, it's basically angle of attack or rake or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And you get five degrees.
I was thinking about when I heard that they broke the foil, and they say that they'll be on the start line without their port foil. I was thinking, you'd normally have a spare set, but the more I thought about it, it's not just like a spare mast or a spare boom. Like in the developmental stage,
it's
pretty hard to actually build a couple of sets, certainly at $200,000 or $300,000 a piece as well. So, but they'll get out there and see how a boat actually performs. This is the real test between with a foil and without a foil, because you'd argue when Alex was in the Southern Ocean with his broken foil, that Bank Pop didn't exactly set him on, well, just smoke him at all. The boat was still super quick.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not as though they're going to need that port foil for the first few weeks either. Yeah. Oh dear, they're gonna. It'll be interesting. I agree. That's a really good point. I thought they were going to have. I thought they must have had another foil ready to go, and that's why they were going to make it to the start. But obviously, they're just going to go without. Maybe stick a little dagger board out the side or something.
I'm sure they'll be doing everything they possibly could, and whether they had foils in build right now or not, I'm not sure. But they'll be doing as much as they can to have something, I'm sure. But if they don't, it's not the end of the world.
All right. Cool. Good discussion. All right, let's move on. Sci-Fi, we have a question we've started asking each other. What yacht are we buying this week? Okay, so this is it's just for us. What you know, we're always looking on websites and things and having a chat and getting new boats and see what turns us on. And so last week, me and BP went for that little wooden, that LA-28, the beautiful wooden trailer sailor thing, and Bicey went for an aircraft carrier.
Nuclear-powered fridge. Bloody cold beer, I tell you.
Staff of 3,000. Yeah.
This week, Bicey, you've come down in size.
Yeah, I'm sticking kind of at the bigger end of the fleet, though. And Club Swan 125. I saw the renders of the boat look beautiful, like as a actual, looks like a beautiful sailing boat. And then the interior also, it's something that, really gave it a bit of movement, must I say.
The interior of the boat. Do you reckon that was, what's our friend's name? Monk? What's her name? Sophie Monk? Not Sophie Monk.
Oh, yeah. She might have been involved. Adrian.
Adrian. Yeah. Adrian, that's it. She's does all the super yacht interior design stuff. So I wonder if it was her work. If this was an X-rated version of the program, I know exactly what I'd say, but we're not doing that. What about you, Sci-Fi? Any boats turning you on at the moment? What would you buy this week?
I guess I've been quite blinkered and just been looking at mocha boats recently. So I'll tell you which one I'd get in about a week's time.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, tell us which one you want now. Yeah. Okay.
You've been sailing.
You nearly got him, Jordan.
Wally's quite a bit, though.
I've done plenty of sailing with the Wally Kentos. And they're actually very cool boats. Really cool for, something that's, a bit a super yacht-esque, but with a pretty sort of strong element of performance, shall we say. They're very cool and great fun to sail. Be fair to say we've had some pretty good racing with especially between ourselves and Magic Carpet
in
the Wally Cento. So they're great boats, so it'd be really interesting to see what happens with this new Swan 125. They've got some good guys involved, and it's a pretty ambitious project, so
absolutely. You take a Wally Cento offshore, you reckon?
I think the only offshore the Centos have done are the Duralia race, and I think that's probably plenty.
that's enough.
they're pretty powerful boats. Like they're big rigs. They really are designed for the Med, so there's like big rigs, massive sail area.
Yeah.
All the loads are quite high, and then the systems on board are like so grunty, so you can race the boat hard in shore.
Yeah.
And then we're using drop systems for the chute and all of that. It's a pretty interesting challenge.
Cool.
Gone are the snuffers and in with the drop systems.
Drop systems, and then the winch systems now are just so powerful. It's unbelievable. And you're trying to like eke out every bit of performance out the systems as well. It's actually really interesting. I always used to be a little bit skeptical of sailing on boats with hydraulic winches and all of that. I preferred the pedestals, but I think with that boat, I've really embraced the sort of powered winch sailing thing and that whole challenge of getting the performance from that system and all of that. And I guess it works quite nicely, given that I work for a company that now does that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
I'm advocating for it stronger than ever now.
Very cool. Exactly. BP, any boats calling to you at the moment?
Well, look, this week, there's only one real sort of a couple of boats that have sort of surfaced. And, look, I've decided I'm going to buy an AC boat. I'm going to buy Luna Rossa.
Right.
That's me.
Let's roll.
Ball tightener. What? How good is it?
Yeah, yeah.
It just looks lovely. It just looks lovely. But it's only the colours. The colours are nice. It's just nice colours.
It's the shape as well. It looks good. How many photos can Mark Somerville send out, mate? Somerville. He's in love, isn't he?
Well, so he should be.
You know, we start each bar karate week with, you know, trying to keep away from it a little bit. You just can't help it. It ends up back there, doesn't it? You know, here we are now talking about it again. I love it.
Sci-Fi, you saw all the boats out, and you've obviously seen, unless you're so entrenched in the 60s at the moment, have you had a look at the pictures of them all sailing? Have you fallen in love with any one of them?
Yeah, no, it's been super interesting. The four boats are all pretty different. You know, like the Team New Zealand Luna Rossa thing with the sort of the bump on the bottom, well, a really radical bump on the bottom. Luna Rossa is really interesting. Yeah. And then you got American Magic and the Ineos boat, which are basically big scows. It's going to be interesting to see who's right and who's wrong, because that will be the case.
Yep.
We have to wait and see, I guess. And then the videos are creeping out of people foiling around, which is cool. There was a good video of American Magic foiling in pretty light winds.
Yep.
And it looks like there's been a few photos floating around of Team New Zealand sailing in some pretty decent breeze as well. So it's pretty interesting for sure. I guess the one thing we haven't seen any videos of those boats taking off. I think that's probably the bit that everyone's trying to hide as well is
how they take off, how they're going to launch.
Sure. That's it. All the videos we see are quite. They're edited quite heavily. We're not seeing a lot of detail. That Ineos footage, you know, when I first saw that, BP, just go with what we were just thinking there. But with that Ineos footage, when I first saw it and this little quick edit, I thought it was just a simulator image rather than the actual sailing. But I've seen the raw footage now, so I know that that was. I thought that they weren't sailing. I thought it was all just a simulator, but they actually are. So, yeah.
What, you thought it was generated straight out of the computer?
Yeah.
Playing the game.
Yeah, I did. I genuinely did. I didn't think it was all there. So, yeah.
Ah, cool. I from what you see though, they all look pretty stable in flight, and be it the same as the old Mocha boat, they're going to take a long time to master, and once they get it down, it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, boys, BP's been quite clever this week. While we're talking America's Cup boats, he's gone out and he's thought of. The view from someone that really doesn't actually know what's going on with the world of sailing. So what he did is he's got a good mate of his, a guy called Evan Hocking, who's a bit involved in a bit of comedy. He's got a tinge of the ginge. He's into the sport, but he has no clue about sailing. So BP, what did you do for our mate Evan this week? What was the challenge you set him?
What I've done is I've thought we'd tried like a bit of a segment every month or so. We'd get in touch with Evan and give him a photo of something that's going on and throw him in the deep end, if you like, and see what he comes up with. As we mentioned, Evan is a working comedian here in Australia, and he does the Great Aussie Pub Tour, where I met him a couple of years ago in Portland while we were waiting for the weather to go through. So
is that when you made your debut into the comedy?
Yes, I did. Yes, I actually, we had a couple of VBs actually upstairs of the Portland Hotel after the incident. It was a very funny evening. So, Evan, are you there, mate?
I am, boys. How are we all going?
Good.
We're good. Welcome to Bar Karate, guys.
Nah, thanks so much for having me. And I'll be honest, I did hear the intro, and I know nothing about sailing. I know nothing about yachting. Basically, my knowledge of yachts, the only thing I know is, and where I get all my information from, is just from American, like, hip-hop, R&B, and, American hip-hop, R&B video clips. So
you're right.
Oh, they're accurate.
So is that what yachting's like? It's just full of 20 scantily clad bikini models on a yacht. Is that how it works, boys?
Who's going to answer
that?
Yes,
that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is, and that's what keeps us coming back every week to our yachts. No, but look, probably one of the important things we wanted to do with this was we wanted to throw you in the deep end a little bit. One of the other things was you've heard about the Ginga Challenge. We've sort of given you a little bit of a heads up on that. You do support a tinge of Ginge, which is one of the good things. I've sort of thought would bring you in as an entertainer for our Ginga Challenge team. Would that suit you?
I'd love to. Anything Ginga related, I'm all up for it. At the moment, I'm down in Melbourne and it's 12 degrees and overcast. I've been out in the open for about 10 minutes and I'm already sunburnt, boys. So if the line goes quiet, it's because I've had to retreat down to the attic just to stay out of the UV rays, boys. So when is this Ginga challenge? When are we looking at maybe getting onto that?
They do need a humorous side because most of the time there'll be punch-ups on board anyway, so I reckon you could be in for a show.
Well, that's the fiery redhead in any – that's when you've been bullied from the age of three.
Exactly. Exactly.
All your adulthood, you know, something's going to give. And and the problem is a lot of gingers, they just turn on each other. It's just that quality in them, but – you know, because there's different types of ginger. There's, you know, you got your real fire crutch, your real sauce head sort of ones are with that bright flame and orange. You've got, I classify myself as a strawberry blonde.
Yeah.
Strawberry blonde.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm not pasty sort of albino sort of skin.
Jordan's more the old Fanta pants.
And yeah. And I learned early on that you really had to do a bit of maintenance downstairs with the when it did come to the Fanta pants, because
sci-fi's completely lost here. I thought I was on a sailing show. So, Evan, we've got Simon Fisher here with us, who's one of the world's best navigators and done thousands and thousands of miles, and he's just, what the hell have I got myself into here? Hey, listen, let's quickly...
Just Googling the US rap stars and bikini-clad women.
Well, I think Pitbull, if you ever get anything with Pitbull, there's always a few yachts in his film clips.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and he's somewhere in Spain or something like that. There's always something like that.
I was just going to say, if you look at some of those video clips, you're probably going to see other guest Simon Fisher in the background. Like he's likely in there.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get down to it. So what we're going to do is we're going to introduce Evan every now and again when we sort of, you know, when it comes around our way.
The layman.
We're going to call him the layman. Right, yeah. So he's going to be known as the layman. How does that suit you? Does that work for you, Evan?
Mate, that works for me. I'm happy to be called anything and to get some recognition on any podcast, whether it be sailing, whether it be music podcast, or mate, I'm just happy to get
Australian Prime.
As a redhead, I'm just happy to get a little bit of just some positive reinforcement about my place in the world.
Hey, well,
you've definitely come to the right place. Yeah. Hey. It's my next favourite pastime, just taking the piss out of redheads.
Well, I'm glad. Anything to get the ratings up for the podcast, boys. Whatever you need. I'll take it on the chin.
I got to tell you, just before this, we started recording, I got the phone call from the missus. Can you come and pick us up from lunch? She's an optometrist, and all the her workers were having a pissy lunch, and I had to pick her and three other lasses up and take them home, and they were asking what I was going to do the other, and I said, I've got to go and record my podcast. And then they started pitching the idea for an optometry podcast, so maybe I can get you on that, Evan. You could talk...
mate. I can do whatever. Well, my fiance, she's a doctor, so it's always a step down. I'm happy to talk to an optometrist.
A step down.
I might talk to a speech pathologist the way I'm going as well.
There we go.
But,
all right. Yeah. Okay. So let's roll into this. We've got another couple of minutes before we've got to let you go because you're a busy man. Obviously down the pub for your next tour.
Yes, yep.
We sent you. I sent you the photo of the four America's Cup boats. Now, America's Cup is quite a big event in the sailing world. You probably have heard a little bit about it in the in your time. The four photos that I sent you are of the current America's Cup boats that have come out, and I thought I'd just throw it at you because they're not your usual looking boat, are they?
No. Well, like I said, I did study up and I did watch a few, you know, Usher film clips and that, and I did not see one of those yachts on their film clip. Like, how the hell do you – how many people do you fit on those boats?
Oh.
Am I calling them boats? They're not boats, are they? They're
Yeah, boats.
How many people do you fit on those things?
Actually, what is the rule on that one?
Because they're going pretty quick as well, BP was saying. They're going at like 100 Ks in the water. Like, how are you meant to party and skull, do vodka shots and that?
Yeah.
If, those things. Well, put it this way, most of the guys that do sail them, I've seen them pretty much party like Usher. So, various times. They're actually quite similar, to tell you the honest truth.
No, I love that.
So when you look at the boats, when you look at the boats, Evan, what springs to mind, mate? What's the first thing? You've got different sort of shapes there. Let us know what you think there.
Well, I had a look at them. I thought the person who designed them, what kind of acid were they on? I think that must have been something where they've just gone on some psychedelic little trip, and I thought, oh yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Like, are these guys qualified? Are they actually engineers, or how are they designing these things?
They throw a bit of sticky at the wall and see what falls off, you know. Sort of.
I guess it's like writing a joke sometimes as well. You just got to throw a bit of crap against the wall, see what sticks, and I'm sure over time, and as the layman starts to develop a bit more knowledge in the sailing area, something like that, I'll just be able to have a look at it and go, oh yeah, there's your foil, there's your rudder, there's your that's the only two words I know.
Well, you're doing a hell of a lot better than one of our very experienced guests we had on, Chris Hoskins, the foily keely thing he called it.
So when you look at the four of them, which one do you think, that one I like looking at the best?
Oh, hang on a sec. I'm just on my phone. I'll just bring it up. Hang on, boys. Hang on. All right, we're all good.
Yeah.
Sorry about this.
You're all right.
All right. So and what about the sponsors? So you got Amiga. Is that a watch company?
Yep.
Amiga?
Yep.
And Toyota. So, and then we've got the Airbus. Is that?
Yep.
The Airbus. I watched an episode of Air Crash Investigation a few nights ago, and one of the Airbuses, it wasn't, let's just say, it didn't end well. So, no.
Maybe these boats will end up on Air Crash Investigations.
Well, maybe they will, and we've got Prada, that's sure. What would that piece of boat be worth, that Prada one down there?
Yeah, well, they're up there. They're up there.
And they're very lightweight. Are they like the sort of Tour de France bikes that very, very lightweight and
carbon fibre, not a cent spared. So
not a cent spared.
They'll put a dent in the back pocket.
Make sure
you do well on the Great Aussie Pub Tour, because if you're going to buy one of these boats, you're going to need some coin.
I was just going to say.
Well, I tell you what, if I keep shouting BP beers after. After the gig, I'm gonna have to put the wallet away if I want to afford one of these things.
All right, okay. So let's make a prediction. We're gonna let you go. I want you just to pull one of the boats out of the hat and tell us which one's gonna win the America's Cup. Go.
Oh, good call.
On the spot.
I'm going Prada. I'm going the third one down. With the bloke at the front who looks like, I don't know what he's doing, but I'm gonna go that one. Is that who owns that? Who owns that?
That's the Italians, Luna Rossa.
Millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the Italian. They're the stylish ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see the Italian flag there.
That boat is the one most likely to be in one of those film clips you're talking about.
Oh, that's the Air Crash Investigation boat, is it?
No.
Well, the Italians.
Oh, no, okay, back to the
that film clip, yeah.
Hey, it's been great. It's been a great thing. It's been great catching up with you, Evan. And I think we'll keep with the layman. He might start showing up a few more times. We look forward to it.
Nah, thanks for having me, boys. And like I said, it's getting a bit hot down here, so I better get out of the sun. It is getting 12 degrees. It just dropped to 10, but I haven't got any zinc on, so yeah. I'm in trouble. See you later, boys.
Nice, mate. Send my best to Eddie.
Will do.
All right. See you, mate.
See you, fellas.
Right. Okay, so the layman's picked Luna Rossa. Sci-Fi, did you have any input on that, mate?
Oh, it's going to be an interesting one. I think you got to – the safe bet's the Kiwis, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to back the it's their event to lose, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see how it all develops. There's some pretty different thinking going on in the whole shape, so let's see how it all pans out.
We had a bit of a conversation last week where we talked exactly around that with in terms of what was happening with the location. So we had Richard Gladwell on, and he talked about where he thought the courses would actually end up being, and he reckons it's going to be a lot rougher than people think. So that's going to be of interest, whether because he thinks a lot of them are designing for flat water, particularly the scows. You know, like they don't like a bit of chop, the old scow. So I'll be interested to how it goes. Bice, you had three questions, is that correct?
Yeah, I thought, you know, just to mix it up a bit. Non-sailing related, or they can be if you want. And it's just for the audience to get to know us and our guests better a little bit. Mm. And I heard, it was just a theme on another podcast I heard. So I was just thinking about what question could I pose to you blokes? And I've got one in particular. You don't have to answer it now, maybe right at the end. But and you often lean along these lines, Jordan, with just start up a conversation, but I'll go for BP first.
I can see where you're going.
If you were arrested without explanation, what would your friends and family think you have done?
Do you want me to answer that right now, or you want me to give me a bit of time?
Yeah, well, no, Jordan knows exactly how to answer it, so now hit it straight off the head. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say from experience because obviously that puts me on the spot, but I'd have to say probably I'd have to say probably disagreeing with bouncers at nightclubs.
Oh, yeah.
Got arrested for that.
From experience.
Sci-fi, have you got an answer?
Yeah, I suspect it'd probably be a late night thing.
Yeah. So that's what your family are going to think.
Getting arrested, but I suspect if I did ever get arrested, it would probably be between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m.
Right. So my family, if I was arrested and they didn't know and they were wondering what it'd be, they'd likely assume that I'd been accidentally or falsely arrested as I rushed in to save an orphanage from an attack from some sort of evil conglomerate, and I'd put my life on the line and got in there. That's the sort of thing they'd assume, that I was there helping and doing something, and I just got picked up in the milieu, a bit like
yeah, righty, eh? Yeah. So I was Flash. Actually thinking about when I heard this question, I wonder, and I was probably along the lines of Simon as well. It'd be a late night something or another, but then I was actually flying at the time, and then I thought to myself, maybe they'd just think I would be being escorted off a plane at some point in time because made my way up to the top bar one way or another.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so I'm not sure if we answered that very well at all, but were there any more, or that was it?
No, I'm going to leave it at that one
this
week, and then we'll see what happens coming up.
Okay, so on the news front, World Sailing CEO. Oh, this is a nice family shot, Simon. World Sailing.
The boys have just come in to join me.
Yeah. World Sailing CEO Andy
Hunt
has decided to leave his post at the end of the year. Anyone got a view on that?
Not a view, but there was certainly a lot of commentary about it.
Yeah.
I don't think he had many mates by the sounds of things.
Does anybody else want to answer anything? So, do you know Andy at all? Because it's based.
No, between Brexit and all this Catalan independence stuff that's been going on this week, I haven't much had much of an opportunity to catch up on sailing politics. But it's a shame, I guess, that our world body seems to be so mired in politics. But
I mean, we don't know exactly.
To hear more about it.
Do you know him, BP? Did you have any?
I don't, but I can say that I was at the Australian Sailing Hall of Fame inductee evening on Friday night, so a bit of a local sort of side of it. I caught up with our good mate Alistair Murray. He was he didn't know me from a bar of soap, and then I mentioned who I was, and because we'd never met before. I just walked up to him and go, "And how are you, mate?" And so there is some inside goss there as well. There's some big changes going on, and I do know some little things there, but the presidency and vice presidency obviously has been with Matty Allen and Sarah Kenny finishing up their role. The positions are open, and I do know who fills them, but I'm not allowed to tell you.
Okay,
how does that sound? I can tell you guys after.
But after,
you know what I mean.
I do want to say while you're actually talking those awards, Brett Yardley picked up.
Our good mate Brett Yardley from Brighton Seacliff Yacht Club won the inaugural Instructor of the Year award. Good on him. I spent a couple of hours after the event with him sort of discussing about how to improve the instructorship.
I'm sure you did. Role. What establishment was that? You didn't get arrested, did you?
No. We ended up obviously just up the road from the evening. It was good. And he's in fine form and he's very happy. Well worthy of the award, to be honest. He does a wonderful job down there at Brighton Seacliff Yacht Club. Brett Yardley, well done.
Yeah, congrats.
And of course to the other winners, well done to all. Adrian Carhalan inducted into the Hall of Fame. So there you go.
Have you sailed against Adrian so far?
Yeah, I've sailed against Adrian with Adrian.
Yep. She's
yachty, really good yachty.
Yeah.
Person as well.
She likes.
It'd be fair to say, I've learned a few little navigation things from Adrian.
Yeah,
did a bit of maxi cat sailing back in the day, and I've done a Hobart with Adrian as well. So, good friend.
Yeah, good, and probably well deserved. You know, she's at the forefront the whole time. You know, like particularly from the female front. I don't like to sort of identify between the two, but she really did drive the female side forward. So good on her. Are you coming down for summer or not? Are you doing the Hobart?
Not at this stage. I'm well overdue a Christmas at home with the family. But never say never.
Never say
last
never.
Last year was a bit of a sort of late call up for the Comanche program after Stan did his leg in jumping into a rib, I think. So that was good fun, and it was having not done the Hobart for a good number of years, it was pretty cool to come down and race in the 100 footers for the line on a sink. You forget what a big deal it is until you're actually there doing it. And it was great.
Very good.
Fun. Really. Getting to the customs house at the other end as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think we've got a bit of history there as well. Sci-fi, we did the 2002 Hobart together, didn't we?
Yeah.
On the old Hollywood Boulevard, the Far 52 days, Simon Shaw and all the boys.
Yeah, cool. Actually, that was... Well, I think it was my first Hobart, and until last year, the only one I'd actually managed to finish. So,
very cool.
Almost actually, 20 years apart, we my know, Hobart we, finishes.
Yeah, there you go. We actually nailed that race. We held the record for the fastest boat under 60 foot or whatever it was for a long time and got into the top 10 over the line, which was a great effort from all on board. So there you go, bit of trivia for us. All good.
Cool. Moving on, Secret Pro. Any Secret Pro news?
Negative. No Secret Pro news this week. I think everyone's busy.
Oh, there is some Secret Pro news. Simon Fisher's got
got an announcement.
Right, live here on Barcarani.
What are you telling us, Si?
No announcements just yet, but maybe I'd have to come back when there is one. Tell you a bit more about it.
That's why not. That's what we're here for, Barcarati, mate. There's a fair chance, you know, obviously when you when the Hobart is, if you do come down, you know, that it's fairly likely that Barcarati will do the commentary now that we've established ourselves as the probably the greatest sailing commentary speaking team in the world. Well, second greatest, obviously. We don't want to brag. So, yeah, you know, you'll be able to see us the whole way through. So, yeah, let us know, mate. We'd love to do the announcement.
I will. Yeah. I will, for sure.
Yeah. All right. What else should we talk about, gentlemen? Should we hit results or not?
Yeah, we've got a couple of results to go through. There's a couple I want to go through. So you're going to do the transition music bit? I missed that today so far.
Oh, you haven't seen the transition music? Okay.
Nor heard it for that matter.
Did you not hear it just then?
No, yeah, no, I got it. We got it. Just okay. Didn't see it as you announced.
Oh, righto. Since yeah. I'm on fire you today, idiots. Aren't I? It's if you put me in decent on a decent plane, I would have probably been more switched on today. All right, Melger's 24s. Congratulations, Medolis. Perigio Gianluca, his team, won the Melgers.
Well done, Jordan.
Yeah,
well
thanks, done. Mate. Bruce Ayres team from the US in second. So 45 points to 49, and then the Bombarda team of Andrea Pozzi in third. So pretty much Italian-US at the front of the field. They were in Sardinia, so I can actually say with accuracy Sardinia now. Got that right?
Wasn't in Sicily. Wasn't in the Straits of Messina.
Congratulations to them. Oh, dear. I tell you what, I'm on fire this week, aren't I? Somebody else can lead this whole show, I think.
No, can't.
Dragons, did anyone have a look?
What other results we got?
Dragons, did anyone have a look at those?
Negative.
Negatory?
From my side.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So in the Dragons, the Gold Fleet final results now was Jens Christensen. So didn't he write like a Hans? He was one. Is that Hans Christian Andersen? Didn't he write? What do you call it with the kids? So Jens Christensen from Denmark first, the Netherlands.
Is that of the North Sails theme? Fame, rather?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, good link.
Peter Harima from the Netherlands and his team on Troika, second, and then Christoph Wielen, a German team of, were in third. I did find, did you notice that in fifth place there was the famous Japanese sailor Peter Gilmore? Coming in fifth, so congratulations to him. And then the famous Turkey sailor Andy Beedsworth in 10th.
Oh, the Preventer. Oh, yeah.
He's
right, yeah.
Yeah, so.
He's a very, very, very famous Turkish sailor.
So, obviously, I don't know, carrying their nationalities for it. I would have thought Pete would have swapped his back by now. Anyway, there you go. Did you look at the Swans, Bicey, at all or not?
Yeah, I had a bit of a look. And the interesting thing, well, the Nations Cup, well, the perfect name for it, to tell you the honest truth, given there were 14 different nations there spread between the 36s, 42s, 45s and 50s. So plenty of representation. The Italians took out the Nations Cup, closely followed by the Germans and the Russians, who were equal points behind. So with Italy taking out the 36s and the 42s, Germany took out the 45s and the Russians took out the 50s. So good fleet, and plenty of good sailors getting around that. The Real Club Nautico Parma.
Yeah, cool.
Last week.
Mm-hmm. Cool. BP, you going to say something there, mate?
Oh, mini transit.
Yep, go for it, my friend. The mini transit. So leg one's finished.
Shooting. Yeah, leg one's finished, and what a finish it was. In the proto division, Alex Trehin, Francois Jambou, and Tongay Burule got in for the prototype. 8 days, 17 hours, 58 minutes and 28 seconds. Now, wait for this. Second was only 6 minutes behind.
Cool. Okay.
Okay.
8 days of sailing. Third place, further 26 minutes back. Okay, so just to give you an idea of how close these guys are sailing, and I don't know, well, I'll quickly just do the series, just 1 second, and then I'll just go through something else that we did here. Okay, Ambrogio Beccaria, we said the Italian with the French contingent chasing him down, couldn't quite get him in the end. He got over the line in front of Felix de Nevatel and Matthew Vincent. I made a prediction last week. I don't know. Do you remember what it was? Anyone here?
Yep. Top five. It'll be a top female and top five of both.
Then there was. So I pulled it out of the bag. There we go. So in the series division, Amélie Grassi, French female sailor, gets in for fifth. And I'll just go back to Proto because I'm organized here with technology. Marie Gendron, she was sort of sailing around fifth and sixth overall for the whole way down, and she managed to snag herself up into fourth. So there we go. Fantastic result for them. Fantastic result for the Mini Transit. And now they're in port in the Grand Canaries waiting for the next leg to start. So we'll keep you posted on all that.
Hey, Sci-Fi, you may have noticed our pronunciations of all the names of these different sailors is pretty bang on, but you also may have noticed that I did not mention one sailor's name in the about the Swans.
We do have a bit of a laugh about ourselves and in that area because we just don't have a clue in Australia. We just don't have a clue. It's not Dave-O, Jono or Smith-O.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you did a good job, mate.
Yeah. Just a quick congrats to the Australian women's match racing team from the CYCA, the Sydney-based team. India Howard's team had a win. That was up here last week. Congrats to my little the team led by Sarah Johnson from Mooloolaba Yacht Club. Congrats to Daniel Kennedy's team from Mooloolaba Yacht Club in second and third. So, So, moving on from that, proud of those teams is all I'm going to say. Happy days, happy days. What else do we need to talk about? We're nearly done, boys. Is there anything?
Yeah.
Can we pick on Sci-Fi about something else?
No, because otherwise I will get arrested in one form or another. We need to wrap it up while it's kept clean.
All right.
He reckons. I'm still waiting for that announcement, so we'll wait and see what happens, eh?
Yeah, you've done well, Sci-Fi. You've hidden well.
Done well.
Have you thought about being a politician?
I'm staying well clear of politics, mate.
You're perfect.
They're looking for a few new ones in the United Kingdom at the minute.
Yeah, they all need replacing.
All right.
Which is there. Stay clear of politics.
I mean, you gave answers without answers, you know, like you were quite clever in a couple of instances, I noticed. So just pointing that out, you've got a skill for it. gentlemen, at the end of the week last week, I asked the question, what is Volkswagen's best-selling product? Any idea, Sci-Fi? What is Volkswagen's best-selling product?
I guess the obvious answer would be a car, but which car? Maybe the Golf?
Yeah, well, the Golf sells 35 million.
Combi in Mexico.
Yeah. The Golf has sold 35 million, the Beetle 20 million. The biggest selling thing that Volkswagen has produced is a currywurst sausage. Currywurst sausage. A grilled bratwurst smothered in a mix of ketchup and curry powder. It's one of Germany's most popular foods. And Volkswagen in Wolfsburg, they've got 60,000 employees there, and they churn out 7 million currywurst sausages a year. So, wow. Volkswagen.
I wonder how many monkeys they use to test the sausage first.
So there you go. It's all about the sausages. And who'd have thought that Germans would love a sausage that much? Hey?
So there you go. Bar karate is what it's all about, and you learn about that, things like that. Yeah. Excellent.
Well, you've got another one to learn from here. So the question for next week, and leading into maybe one day we'll get a bit of our language expert on, where does the term feeling blue come from? This is directly sailing related. Where does the term feeling blue come from? Sci-Fi, you got an answer?
Well, given it's a quiz question, I actually read about this the other day.
Oh,
And yeah, you're right. It is sailing related, but I won't give it away. I'll keep the quiz question going.
Beautiful.
Well done. Good on you.
Good there's on another you. Answer without.
Yeah, yeah,
without
no.
an answer.
No, yeah. Well.
I got to say, Sci-Fi, we love hanging out with you, mate. It's been, I mean, it's been a ton of fun, even though you gave us nothing, you bastard. So it's been a ton of fun. But when you are ready to speak, come back on.
No, I'd love to. It'd be great. It's great joining you guys. Right. And hit me up if you want a bit of doc chat on the TJV next week.
Up. Oh, yeah. Good idea.
I'll be there to the ground. So happy to report back to you, mate.
Good man.
Nice, Simon. Thanks, mate.
No problem. Pleasure.
Good on you guys. See you later, everyone.